Well, today we are going to be discussing part two of lesson nine, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, as presented in our Bible correspondence course. And we lead off with question number three, which reads, are we to strive to live a sin-free life of obedience as we observe the 7 days after Passover of unleavened bread? And so let's look at some of the writings here. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, Paul says to the Corinthians, your glorying is not good. You're bragging, you're boasting about yourself. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Now, figuratively, when we look at the word leaven, we understand that leaven here means false doctrine. So we might read this verse as, do you not know that a little false doctrine falsely indoctrinates the whole body? And then moving on to verses 7 and 8 in 1 Corinthians, chapter 5, therefore, purge out the old leaven. In other words, get rid of false doctrine, that you may be a new lump. In other words, that you may be a regenerated body. Since you truly are unleavened, which figuratively means since you truly are pure. For indeed, Messiah, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, and he's speaking of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, not with old leaven, in other words, not with worn-out false doctrine, nor with the false doctrine of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread, which is only one word, unleavened bread. There, the word bread is not in the text. And the word is azumos, meaning uncorrupted or purity. So he's saying to keep the feast with uncorrupted or purity, but with the purity of sincerity and truth. And those two words there, sincerity and truth, are elekrinias and eleteias. Paul is literally saying, let us keep the feast with the purity of clear genuineness and mindful honesty. Clear genuineness and mindful honesty. Question number four. Is the eating of unleavened bread for 7 days designed to encourage us spiritually to worship Yahweh according to his will, sincerely and truthfully? And for that, I want to go to the book of Joshua, chapter 24, verses 14 and 15, which reads, now therefore, fear Yahweh, serve him in sincerity and truth. We won't accuse Paul of plagiarizing here, but what we know is that the Torah, the writings, and the prophets are the foundation upon which all of the New Testament writers are aware of and use to validate Yahweh and his will. Now, therefore, back to Joshua. Fear Yahweh, serve him in sincerity and truth. And in Hebrew, those two words are tamim and emet. Tamim and emet, which means in unblemished integrity and faithful stability. Unblemished integrity. And if you think of the word integrity, it means integrated. You're put together. It's all in order, basically. And put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve Yahweh. And if it seems evil to you to serve Yahweh, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. It is a commandment that we rest on the seventh day of the week. It is also Yahweh's commandment that we work the other 6 days per week sincerely and truthfully. Paul addresses this in Colossians 3, verses 22 through 25. He writes, bond servants, okay, he's not writing to servants here or slaves. He's writing to bond servants, which is someone who once was a slave, and figuratively he's speaking of slave to sin, but who have been freed from that and have elected to bind themselves to Yahweh through Yahshua. Bond servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service, in other words, not just pretending to be busy as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart. And those two words there, sincerity and heart, are haplotetes cardias, which we get the word cardia, or the word for heart in medicine. Cardiac, right? Yeah, we don't want our heart to arrest, to stop. And whatever you do, do it heartily. And that's a different word there. Heartily is ek sukes. Ek sukes. In other words, from the Spirit. As to Yahweh and not to men, knowing that from the Master you will receive the reward of the inheritance. For you serve the Master, Messiah. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality. Now, the promise that Paul is talking about here of the reward of the inheritance, what is the inheritance of Yahweh? And for that, let's go back to Isaiah 19, verses 24 and 25, which reads, in that day, Israel will be one of three with Egypt and Assyria. And if you can picture it in your mind, Israel's here and Assyria's above and Egypt is below. In that day, Israel will be one of three with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the land, whom Yahweh of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed is Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. So it is Israel that is Yahweh's inheritance, which in the end of time, Yahshua will give back to the Father. He came to restore the whole house of Israel. He sent his disciples to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. This is clear throughout the New Testament. Why the Messiah came was to restore all Israel to the Father. And when we think of Yahshua being the head of our assembly, this assembly and those who are faithful in keeping the will of Yahweh will be given to Yahweh by the hand of Yahshua. We can't get there any other way. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 9, we read, for Yahweh's portion is his people, Jacob, meaning Israel. Jacob is the place of his inheritance. A comment here, eating unleavened bread for 7 days is also a reminder of Yahshua's unadulterated pure sacrifice for those in the body of Messiah. After having partaken of the emblem previously on the 14th of Abib. Matthew 26, verse 26, which is also quoted in Mark 14, 22, 26, Luke 22, and in 1 Corinthians 11. But it reads, and as they were eating the Passover meal, Yahshua took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. In Luke 22, verse 19, we see that Luke includes the remembrance of this act, and he writes, "He took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, 'This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me.'" And in 1 Corinthians 11, verses 23 and 24, we see pretty much the same thing. "For I received from the Master that which I also delivered to you, that the Master Yahshua, on the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me.'" Question number 5 of the correspondence course. Does one work on all 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread? There may be many of you who are not familiar with the Feast of Yahweh. In Leviticus 23, verses 5 and 8, we read about how this all comes together. "On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is Yahweh's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to Yahweh. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. But you shall offer an offering made by fire to Yahweh for 7 days. The seventh day," and implied here is of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, "shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it." So we do not work on the first day and the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Now, there is always a weekly Sabbath somewhere within those 7 days. There has to be. Therefore, if this Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, does not fall on one of the high Sabbaths, there is another day during the feast in which we do not work. So there could be, and usually is, or are, 3 days during the feast that we are not to work. We are to congregate. It's a holy convocation. Question number 6. Can the first day of unleavened bread also be when Passover starts, that is, as the 14th ends and the 15th begins? Exodus 12, 18. "In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening," and that word there, at evening, is bereb, "you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening." Bereb, again. The phrase "at evening" here is bereb, not harbaim, harbaim. As in the word twilight in Leviticus 23, verse 5, "On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is Yahweh's Passover." Twilight, harbaim, points to the beginning of the day at sunset, whereas at evening, bereb, points to the end of the day, again, at sunset. This is even clearer in the following verse about the Day of Atonement in the fall feasts, which we read about in Leviticus 23, verse 20, verse 32. "It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls. On the 9th day of the month, at evening, from evening to evening, you shall celebrate your Sabbaths." In Hebrew, the phrase "at evening, from evening to evening" is bereb, mireb, ad ereb. This affirms that ereb, meaning evening, can refer to either the beginning or ending of a day. So the verse might read in English, "On the 9th day of the month at evening, from the beginning of the day to the end of the day, you shall celebrate your Sabbath." And let us note that since a day starts at sunset, we know that the first day of unleavened bread starts on the 15th. In other words, at the end of the 14th when the sun sets. The Passover is 1 day. It's the 14th. The 7 days of unleavened bread are from the 15th through the 21st. It was during the Passover that the death angel, and I have a little asterisk that we're going to talk about, that the death angel went through the land at midnight, and which we will read about in Exodus 12, verse 24, on the 14th of Abib. So as a note, we consider that Yahweh is pure spirit and controls the universe by his will, which we metaphorically animate by referring to his voice. He gave his power, his glory, and his voice to his son to create the universe and to rule over it. Yahshua is the shepherd of our assembly, and he is our bridegroom. He certainly has ears to hear our prayers. All that we see happening in the world is under his control until he hands the inheritance, that's those who worship Yahweh according to his will, of the whole house of Israel over to his father. Yahweh causes spirit beings, even the accuser, Satan, to bless and to create calamity in our midst. And we can see Yahweh's power in the aforementioned and the following verse in Exodus 12, verses 29 and 30. And it came to pass at midnight that Yahweh struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock even. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Did Yahweh himself, by a physical arm, perform this act of destruction? We might conclude that by just reading the verse, because Yahweh struck all the firstborn. But let's look at some other scripture that might help us understand this. Isaiah 30, verses 30 and 31. Yahweh will cause his glorious voice to be heard and show the descent of his arm with the indignation of his anger and the flame of a devouring fire, with scattering, tempest, and hailstones. For through the voice of Yahweh, Assyria will be beaten down as he strikes with the rod. In 2 Kings 19, verse 35, we read, and it came to pass on a certain night that the angel of Yahweh went out and killed in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. That's an astounding number. And especially if we, we see the turmoil that 9/11 created, and if there's 3,000 people that died there, how many times does 3,000 go into 185? 62 times. And that's with two towers. So we're looking at the same destruction as if there was 104 towers that all were destroyed. And when people arose early in the morning, there were the corpses all dead. 2 Chronicles 32, 21. Then Yahweh sent an angel who cut down every mighty man of valor, leader and captain in the camp of the king of Assyria. 1 Kings 22, 19 through 23. And I would urge you to listen to this verse, especially if you are a preacher. Then Micaiah said, therefore, hear the word of Yahweh. I saw Yahweh sitting on his throne and all the host of heaven standing by on his right hand and on the left. And Yahweh said, who will persuade Ahab to go up that he may fall at Ramoth Gilead? So one spoke in this manner and another spoke in that manner. Then a spirit came forward and stood before Yahweh and said, I will persuade him. Yahweh said to him, in what way? So he said, I will go out and be a deceiving spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And Yahweh said, you shall persuade him and also prevail. Go out and do so. Therefore, look, Yahweh has put a deceiving spirit in the mouth of all his prophets of yours, and Yahweh has declared disaster against you. This is a warning to all who would preach from the Bible. By what spirit, I would ask, are you teaching? Are your words according to a deceiving spirit that professes the doctrines of men? Are your bookcases filled with the writings of men about the Bible? Or do you read only one book and follow the admonition of the Torah, the writings, the prophets of Yahweh, as well as those writers of the New Testament? It's important to consider this, because if you're teaching the doctrines of men, if you're listening to a man or a group of men or even a whole assembly of men, and they're not preaching from the word, if they're not paying attention to the will of Yahweh, then you are being deceived. Romans 3, verses 4 through 6. Indeed, let Yahweh be true, but every man a liar. As it is written, that you may be justified in your words and may overcome when you are judged. And be assured that we will all be judged. Verse 5, but if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of Yahweh, what shall we say? Is Yahweh unjust, who inflicts wrath? And Paul adds parenthetically here, I speak as a man. Certainly not. For then, how will Yahweh judge the world? The word judge here is the Greek word krino, krino, meaning to condemn or punish. Yahshua will rule the earth with an iron rod. Yahshua will rule the earth with an iron rod. And by what law will he rule? That should be elementary, by the law of Yahweh. In Job chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, we read about another example of how Yahweh accomplishes his work here on earth, especially when either testing or condemning. Now, there was a day when the sons of Elohim, now, sons in Hebrew is the word bane, which we normally take literally, but can mean a number of different things. It can mean afflicted, or it can mean stranger. When the sons of Elohim, we might say those afflicted, came to present themselves before Yahweh, and Satan also came among them. And Yahweh said to Satan, from where do you come? So Satan answered Yahweh and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it. And then Yahweh said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? I wonder if Job's ears were burning at that point. Have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him on earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears Elohim and shuns evil. So does Yahweh, through Yahshua, test us? Absolutely, every day. Well, it goes on in verses 9 through 12 of chapter 1 of Job. So Satan answered Yahweh and said, does Job fear Elohim for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand, metaphorically speaking, and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And Yahweh said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person. So Satan went out from the presence of Yahweh. We should know that while Satan is the accuser, Yahweh through Yahshua, is the avenger. Deuteronomy 32, verse 35. Vengeance is mine, and recompense. Their foot shall slip in due time, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things to come hasten upon them. Hebrews 10, 30 and 31 will close with these verses. For we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says Yahweh. And again, Yahweh will judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living Elohim. And of course, we know that this is the will of Yahweh that would be accomplished by his son, Yahshua. And I say that may we keep all the feasts of Yahweh with clear genuineness, mindful honesty, unblemished integrity, and faithful stability. That is, insincerity and truth.